Hello and welcome to the Like a New Day podcast. My name is Zachary Brannigan. I'm a photographer based in Michigan. And this show is all about photography, creativity, and Leica cameras. So stay tuned. Everybody, it's Zach. Good to be back with you. It's been a little while, but I have been busy behind the scenes, I promise. I've got a lot of good stuff that's coming your way in the next few episodes, and we'll get to that in just a second. But anyway, I'm recording this on November 6th, and not much going on this week, of course, just kind of a low-key week here in the States, you know, really nothing newsworthy, so, you know, I thought I would sit down and put together another podcast episode, but in all seriousness, it obviously has been an incredible and in many ways divisive and intense week here in the United States. I know from our statistics that only about half our audience comes from the United States, so for those of you not in the States, well, good for you, first of all. Second of all, you know, I mean, only for the purposes of this election, the United States is a wonderful place to live. It has been pretty intense, and we still don't know who the leader of our nation will be come January. So hopefully that gets resolved relatively soon. It looks as though it will be. I have been on the campaign trail, actually, quite a bit here. Many of you know I work for an environmental nonprofit, and although that environmental nonprofit is nonpartisan in any way, I do have a lot of people that are sort of deeply embedded with the environmental movement and in conservation here in our area, and that, of course, got me ties to a lot of individuals that are advocating for progressive candidates. So, you know, this is my podcast, and I'm not afraid to tell you that my politics are pretty progressive. I have been a big supporter of the Democratic Party here in our area in terms of my voting record, but not in terms of my volunteering or donating or anything like that. And a common acquaintance of my wife and I introduced me to the idea of coming to a event where our governor was going to be, and please bring my camera. So I did that, and it went well, and I ended up being invited to more things. So kind of in a whirlwind couple of weeks, I ended up having pretty direct access to the governor of Michigan, who has actually made international news lately because of her being picked on by the man in the White House at the moment because of her COVID response. And we're doing very, very well until our Michigan State Supreme Court kind of cut her off at the knees. Our conservatives state court is sort of stacked with people on the other side of the aisle, and they ended up curtailing some of the powers that the governor's office had in this case. And wouldn't you know it, our COVID cases are spiking like crazy. Of course, they're spiking everywhere, but without some of the protections that we had in place before, I feel very vulnerable. So like you, I'm worried about the pandemic, and I hope that it gets better soon. Anyway, I hope that this message finds you well and finds you healthy and finds you happy. I'm finding more and more people that I know who are actually getting infected with coronavirus. At first, it seemed like I didn't know anybody, and now every day I'm getting another message that, you know, this guy's got it, that guy's got it. Hopefully this is behind us soon, and this is but a memory months from now, because like you, I'm ready to travel. I'm ready to get out of here. I'm sure many of us would love to have life kind of resume. So enough of that bummer. But in the course of the political campaigning here in Michigan, which is pretty intense, if you're not a resident of the United States, you might want to know that Michigan is a pretty intense swing state, what we call a swing state, because we elect our presidents based on a state by state individual votes. And then we send electors in the Electoral College to make the final election on our behalf. State of Michigan, I believe, has 16 electoral votes, and so we're a pretty decent size state in terms of population, and we're a pretty important state for either candidate to win, but we are very divided. We are not one of those states that's very clearly one way or the other. We've got a lot of big rural area and small towns, which tend to favor more conservative politics, and then we, of course, have the city of Detroit, Flint, and the Saginaw Bay City area where I live, up and down the Union Automotive Manufacturing former corridor here, and a much more diverse population in terms of, you know, race, gender, economic level. So we tend to steer more on the blue side of the aisle in our area here. So it's a very divided state. This year we did go to the Democrats, so at least on the national level. Re-electing our senator and re-electing, sending our votes to President, future President, hopefully, Biden. Yeah, it was neat. I got, let's get back to photography. I got invited to take some pictures, and I ended up getting incredible access to both of our senators, to our congressman, who I know through my job, and to our governor on multiple occasions. And that was pretty neat. So I will put a bunch of my election photos up. I ended up really kind of latching on to a woman, Sarah Schultz, who is running for or was running for our state House of Representatives in a conservative-leaning district, and she unfortunately did not prevail, but her campaign was very powerful to me and inspirational, and I really enjoyed taking photographs of her and her campaign. So her name is Sarah. You'll see some images on my website at zacharybrannigan.com, and just look under, as always, I think it's podcast images is what it says, so you go there, and I'll have a gallery up of photos that I've been taking recently, so if I refer to any of them, you kind of know what I'm talking about. I'm not going to go on and on with this monologue too much because I have an interview for you today. This is an interview that is the a long time in incubation. So this is an interview with Taylor. So Taylor goes way back with this podcast. She is one of the first individuals that contacted me out of the blue after I began this podcast. And it was because she was in search of a Q2. She had been saving money for it and letting Google do some work for her. She stumbled on an episode of my podcast, I believe the first one, where I talk about the Leica Q2, because that is my my main kind of day-to-day pocket camera. Well, if you have big pockets, that is, it's not that pocketable, but I do carry it with me pretty much everywhere. In fact, I carry a couple of cameras with me just about everywhere. I know a lot of us do, and yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about that in the future, but the everyday carry kind of routine, because I'm interested to know what you guys do for everyday carry for cameras. But yeah, Taylor and I had a great conversation. This is about a month ago now, so it's been a little while, but I had those Justin Mott episodes in the can, and then I knew I was going to be awfully busy for a couple of weeks around the election cycle, so I am back. Also, I have an hour and a half episode, or hour and a half interview, I should say, with Dave Bickley. David Bickley from the, he's a Leica ambassador, and he's a Leica Academy instructor and an employee of the Leica DC boutique. And that was an incredibly powerful conversation. David and I really resonated, I thought, and you'll hear that in the next two episodes after this. I'm going to break it up into two more episodes. So we have three episodes coming, this one, and then two more coming soon. And then I also have another interview lined up with a couple of individuals, but I know the next one is with Brian Caparici, and Brian is the podcaster. He's got over 400 episodes, 500 episodes in the can of the business of photography, so look him up. I will talk a little bit more about him in the intro to the next couple episodes, but you'll be seeing him down the road in about 3-4 episodes from now. And yeah, if you have any ideas about people that you think you'd like me to talk to, let me know. I'm also going to throw in a couple episodes that are just me blaring at the microphone here, talking about the ups and downs of my own photography career, talking about Leica cameras, talking about creativity. One of the things I did want to lay out there was just maybe a couple of future topics, and I would love to hear your feedback. So send me an email at zgbrannigan@gmail.com or ping me on Instagram at zgbrannigan, or just go to my website, zacharybrannigan.com, and you can contact me through there many different ways. A couple of different things. One is I wanted to talk about teaching photography. I thought that'd be kind of a cool episode. Another one is I wanted to talk about third-party lenses. So I'm not an expert. I might need to get somebody else on here that would help me out. But in the interim of maybe the last 6 weeks or so, 8 weeks since I got my Leica SL2, I've kind of gone the way of acquiring some L-mount lenses from Sigma. And I had always been sort of a snob, I think is probably the only way to put it, in terms of third-party lenses. But I will say that the I started watching reviews, and I found in particular the new Sigma 85mm 1.4 DGDN, which is a extremely well-reviewed portrait lens. It's extremely small for what it is and how bright it is, and I got that lens, and man, it knocked my absolute socks off. And this is after I've had the opportunity to use L-mount Leica lenses too. So it is incredible. It was about a $1,400 lens. Since then, I've actually switched the work Nikon kit over to a Panasonic L-mount kit because I thought, well, I could acquire lenses that way and through my own lens purchases. And then everything would be interchangeable. So we have a Panasonic S5 on order and a couple of L-mount lenses, including the 100 to 400 5.5, I think it's 5 to 6.3 variable aperture. And that lens is pretty darn cool, and I also have the teleconverter for it. I picked up the 24-70 f2.8 for my main video lens on the S5, the Panasonic S5. And then for myself, again, I mentioned I had that 85mm 1.4, and also purchased the absolutely incredible but behemoth Sigma 40mm f1.4, which is a legendarily sharp lens that is based on cinema lens architecture. If you're not too familiar with cinema lenses, 40mm happens to be a very common cinema lens range, so or focal length, I should say. And so they adapted that lens to be used in DSLR and mirrorless applications. And if you just kind of Google Sigma 40mm or Sigma 40mm 1.4, you're going to find that in terms of its MTF charts and all that, it is absolutely one of the sharpest lenses ever to be available for purchase. And it's pretty neat. It comes through. It's sort of a dinosaur in terms of how slow it is, and that in terms of its motor and in terms of its focus. But with single point autofocus, it is remarkable, and I've really enjoyed shooting that, especially in low light. The portrait lens, the 85mm, has been great. I shouldn't call it a portrait lens, right? We just say that. That's kind of a dumb thing to do. I actually have used it for street photography. I've used it for some of the political photography I've done, and I've actually just found myself gravitating towards 85mm because I think it's kind of neat. You can do a lot with it. So, yeah, I don't know. It's not a portrait lens, but I know that that's commonly what we call it. But I will say the last lens that I purchased, which is the cheapest one, is probably my favorite and possibly one of my favorite lenses I've ever owned in my life. And that is the Sigma Contemporary Series 45mm f2.8. And it is tiny. It has an aperture ring. It's all metal construction. It has a manual focus. Works great. Just beautiful, beautiful, beautiful resistance on the knob, or I should say the focus ring. And it's tiny. It is tiny. It is just like, it is basically just, it's almost exactly the same size as the Q2's 28mm f1.7 Summilux. It's pretty much the exact same size. So, except of course that it is an L-mount lens and you can take it on and off. This is a lens that got a little bit of traction because it's also made in the E-mount for Sony. And it is an extremely popular lens for Sony. And it's cheap. It's like relatively cheap. It's like $500. But it is really sharp. It focuses ultra fast. And it on the SL2, it makes it just kind of, I don't know, it kind of reminds me of like my Nikon F3, my old film camera, because it's about that heavy with it on there and it's about the same size. And it just kind of makes the SL2 a camera that you can kind of bop around in. You can throw it in your bag and take it with you, which is great because it's an extraordinarily powerful camera. But when you put the 24-70 f2.8 on it, for instance, or you put that 40mm monster on it, it becomes a huge piece of kit. So the 85mm and the 40mm are more or less for studio work, and that's a whole nother thing. And then, that 45mm and the 24-70 are really versatile lenses I can have with me. What was I talking about? I was talking about episodes. I'm sorry. So let's go back. I was going to talk about a future episode might be all about education and photographic teaching and coaching. And I wanted to do an episode again on third-party mount lenses. I thought that would be kind of cool. I want to do one about film photography and film selection. That's something that I really haven't hit on here. And I do not own a Leica film camera, which is probably why. However, that being said, I do an extensive amount of film photography. If you're interested in film photography, I thought maybe we could just talk about film because I don't have a lot of experience with Leica film cameras. So maybe we could just talk about film, generally speaking, because I have a lot of experience with a lot of different film stocks. Maybe I could even throw Polaroid in there because that's another thing. I have sort of an extensive Polaroid collection. It's something of an addiction. I love talking about Polaroid. Maybe photo books would be another one, photo publications. Maybe we could review other podcasts. But also, I thought maybe I would throw a few things in there just about some famous photographers. I do a lot of reading. I'm just finishing a book about Richard Avedon, and it is blowing my mind. You know, I had no real true appreciation of Richard Avedon's work. And after reading this book, I absolutely do. I even purchased a very beat up copy of a pretty famous book. It's a first edition of Richard Avedon autobiography. And it is, he called it autobiography. It's a big photo book. It's gigantic. It's huge and very, very heavy, about 400 pages. And it's just images with no writing. It is amazing. But Richard Avedon, and you'd think, well, fashion photographer, but good Lord, no, that he did so much more than that, from civil rights photography to some really amazing stuff in the American West. And at the time that he was alive, he got a lot of criticism because he was thought of as a commercial photographer, which of course he was, and he had a hard time sort of breaking into the fine art world. Well, now that he's been gone, his influences can be seen in portraiture, especially everywhere. You know, if you've seen like a black and white picture against a stark white background and real close up, I mean, like even like a Mark Mann photo, a lot of his most famous photos clearly have Avedon tones in them. And I think Annie Leibovitz, for instance, you can see, and Annie Leibovitz actually idolized Avedon, and you can see that in her work as well. At any rate, those are some topics I had in mind. So let me know, send me an email about some ideas for episodes. That would be great. So now on to our main thing here. I'm just going to head right into this. This is an interview with Taylor. Taylor is an extraordinary individual. If you don't know Taylor's story, go back a few episodes and I talked about her, but you're going to learn about Taylor directly here. We're going to talk mostly about photography. You know, we don't talk too much about her personal story. Her personal story has been told. I've read emails from Taylor before, but Taylor is a beautiful human being, and she is an EMT and works extremely long hours. It took her months and months to save for her like a Q2, which she now has, and she has been going through some incredible, you know, life changes and things going on in her world. You know, Taylor unfortunately had a very difficult time with essentially post-traumatic stress disorder from her job as an EMT, and at one point attempted to take her own life. And through recovery, she discovered and evolved into a passionate photographer, and photography ended up being a part of her mental health journey. And I've talked a lot about how photography is part of my mental health journey. And so I really connected with Taylor, and it was great to finally speak with her face to face, quote unquote, over Zoom, which is our new world. But anyway, yeah, so here we go. Let's go into this interview with Taylor, and I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts on this. But please, after this, send me your thoughts on future episode ideas, and please send me your ideas or your thoughts, I guess, about Taylor and her interview here. Talk to you guys soon, and I hope that you enjoy this. Hope you enjoy this interview with Taylor. How you doing?
I'm good.
Yeah. Are you
good? I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, awesome. Are you at home or at work, or where are you?
I actually came into the station to use their super nice conference room to get away from the noise of my dogs.
Okay.
And I live out in the country kind of, so internet is not our friend.
All right. Well, that's good. Well, it's awesome to finally talk to you after all this time.
Yeah.
After a whole bunch of emails and everything. Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. I just figured we would chat for a little while, and then I can, you know, edit some good stuff out of it and put it out there. So no pressure or anything like that. I just thought it'd be fun to connect, especially since you now ordered your camera.
Yes. I'm so excited. It's supposed to be delivered tomorrow.
All right.
Unfortunately, I am on an ambulance, and so is my fiance. So I'm relying on the mother-in-law to like squeep in and try to get the UPS driver to let her have it. If not, maybe I think it'll get redelivered on Friday.
Yeah.
Worst case scenario. So
that's the worst, you know, when you've got something coming, yes, and it's signature required.
It is. Yes. I mean, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Because I would not want to lose it. But at the same time, it's like, of course it would fall on a day at work.
Yeah. Did you end up ordering it from Leica DC, or where did you get it from?
I actually ordered it from Leica.com because it came in stock.
Okay.
So I got a notification it was in stock, and I emailed with the guy you set me up with, mm-hmm, and he said he wasn't sure when theirs was coming in. So I went ahead and just got it while I could, because I wasn't sure how long it would take, and then they didn't really know how many they were going to get in.
Yeah.
And there was a good possibility that there's too many people's name on the list. So.
Yeah. Well, right on. Well, then you're going to get it.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Well, you know, in the future, if you ever have any issues or anything like that, they're like super helpful. You know, the guys at the outlet, at the store, outlet, boutique, whatever they call it. But he was really good with me. And actually, I'm going to talk to him for the podcast in a little while because he's a pretty accomplished guy himself as a photographer. Tell me a little bit about your photography and how long have you been interested in photography?
I started as a kid with like my mom's little point and shoot Canons that would zoom out, and she would hand me her little 35 millimeter and let me go to town with it. And I don't know how many rolls of film she had developed through Sam's Club that were like a leaf or part of my hand or a shoe or something just random that was totally me not knowing how to use the camera. But that kind of started it for me. Like, I just loved having a camera in my hands from the time I was little. And then when I got older, I played softball or was into music and stuff and couldn't really afford a camera. Didn't really have access to one. So I kind of fell out of it. But I would always have the little like Polaroids or something you could buy at Walmart or something just to have to take photos when I was at concerts or different things. And last 2 years ago is when I really got into it. You know, she encouraged me to get a camera and told me that she thought that's where my place was besides the back of an ambulance. And I'm so glad she did, because I just kind of took with it and ran with it. I didn't know what I wanted to take pictures of, didn't even know where to start. And it just took off from there.
So what was the pathway to make you decide that you wanted to try to get a Leica?
I've always been into documentary style photography and writing and that style. And I've always loved the photographers that were just kind of in the middle of everything and capturing history and the making in the moment. And I think anytime you look back in time at those photographers or just the different events, even in American history, you always see Leicas.
Mm-hmm.
You see photographers carrying those cameras, and I think they're probably for the similar reasons that I was attracted to them. They're smaller, they're durable, they're made well, they take amazing photos, and you can put it in a bag or, you know, some sort of hoodie pocket or something for the most of them. I mean, mm-hmm. I understand like an M is kind of big to throw in a hoodie pocket, but you could if you wanted to.
It's heavy for a pocket. Yeah. That's the biggest thing. Yeah. Well, the Q2 is nice because it's, here's mine right here, and it's light. I mean, as related to the other cameras, when I had that M10D here, it's pretty considerably heavier with a 50 Summicron on it versus this, because the body on this is, I think it's like machined aluminum versus brass on the other one.
Yeah.
So it's relatively light. The 28 millimeter on there is pretty chubby. So it's like, it's kind of an odd shape to stick in something. It's either thick this way or it's thick that way. But I don't know. I've snuck it into a couple concerts, and it's a great low light photography camera. So it was perfect to have with me. I was able to stick it in a big coat pocket with no problem.
I think I was looking at the weight difference between the Fuji X100F. I think for me, I've never even held an M.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's going to be considerably heavier than what I'm used to.
It will. Yeah.
Fuji.
Oh, it definitely
but I'm
will.
Excited about it.
I used to have an X100F, and it was, and it's definitely a lot lighter. It's a little bit flatter, a little bit more portable, but it's not that much. It's pretty much in the same realm. So are you, if you shot with an X100F, you're used to a fixed focal length with a little bit narrower field there. Do you like 28 millimeters? Are you used to 28 millimeters?
I had some experience with a friend's, I think it was an Olympus Pen F. She had all different kinds of lenses for it. And I still stayed in like the 28 millimeter realm or even up to the 16 millimeter realm. I like wide angles, I guess. Like me doing street photography or going into abandoned places the way I like to, being able to get the widest shot I can without having to lay on the ground or climb a rusted ladder is mm-hmm. amazing. And I like fixed focal lengths. I like the simplicity of not carrying around a bunch of lenses and having to work to get the shot with what you have. I think it's a challenge for me personally. And while it's not everybody's favorite thing, I actually enjoy having to find ways in an environment to get the shot. So,
Yeah, Zoom with your feet.
I'm excited about that part.
You know, I never, when I got my Q2, I thought that the, I thought that the 28 was just like, it might as well have been a 16. It felt so wide because I had been really used to 50 on my film cameras and, shoot with a 50 a lot. And, it just felt so huge and I didn't know what to do with it. Like I really struggled with it at first compositionally, but then I took it to New York and, had that workshop there and it was amazing because the, you get so much with a wider angle lens. And when you're doing street photography like that in a busy, crowded, city, which of course now I can hardly imagine what that was. Yeah. So, you know, some of my favorite pictures that I took there are, you know, there's just a lot going on kind of Joel Meyerowitz style where there's just lots of things in the frame and lots of people and there's a guy on the, you know, on the balcony and there's an ambulance and there's this, and there's all these things going on in the photo, which I never would have gotten, you know, with the 50. So it was, I don't know. I ended up kind of falling in love with it. And then I put a 50 on the SL2 and, now I'm kind of looking at that again in a totally different way. And I find myself wanting to back up all the time and get more in the frame.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're a good complement to each other, but the, it, you know, it's a big shift. I think that it is definitely a mindset. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have a whole lot of experience with 50 millimeter, but if the day ever comes where I own an M, I think that would be the first lens I got just to challenge myself further coming from such wide angles to go into that. Cause I think there's just something amazing from the shots that I've seen on an M shot with a 50. It's just, I like it. Yeah. I don't know if I like shooting it, but I like it.
I really enjoy street photography quite a bit, but something with a little bit more direction and meaning are the things that I've been gravitating to lately, trying to find very specific subject matter in that. And you have an interest in some very specific subject matter. So why don't you tell me a little bit about your direction?
Well, my plan is as soon as I can get my hands on the Q2 and kind of play with it a little bit and work with it, I am really passionate about behavioral health. I'm also passionate about the homeless community. And in Columbia, South Carolina, we have a large homeless community. It kind of backdates to there was a South Carolina State mental institution in South Carolina. It was deinstitutionalized over a period of time. And the people that were housed inside of it, if they didn't have family, they let them out. And the state just let them go. With nowhere to go. So that started the homeless problem in Columbia, or people not having anywhere to live. Working EMS, I used to work for Richland County, which is the county Columbia is in. And I got to know the homeless very well and had such incredible stories. And so you see so many acts of kindness that you wouldn't associate, or people who haven't taken the time to talk with the homeless. They wouldn't know how compassionate or how caring or, you know, the love that's in that community. So my goal when I get my camera and get kind of a handle on the menu systems and stuff is to hit the streets and some of the contacts that I've made over the years, getting their stories and really trying to put some sort of, you know, focus on the issues at hand and the system and how it's broken, and that it's not all what people think. You can't lump everyone into one category in any subject field, but definitely not in this subject field, and just try to put their names out there. And I think that the name of it, I would like to do a photo book or some sort of project on it. And I'm going to call it I Have a Name, because I think the average person walks by, you know, someone that challenged in their living environment, and they don't think about who that person is. They make assumptions that are not always true. I want to bring awareness to that situation and make it personal for the person that's reading it. And also tell the stories of the people that are human, and they're people, their brothers, their sisters, their dads, their grandparents. They have a voice, and I want to give them a voice and an outlet in a world that people just walk by them every day and they don't even think twice.
Well, that's excellent. You know, you're coming at it from the right point of view. You're not sitting here talking about, you know, the photographic techniques you're going to use right off the bat, but thinking about the people and coming at it with an open heart and, you know, having some objective when you come into it, which I think is lacking a lot of times with personal projects, sometimes with with photographers, you know, they, at least with YouTube photographers and things like that.
Yeah. I am not formally trained in photography. So everything that I've learned has either been from my sister, who's taken two college courses, or from YouTube or reading. I have a couple of people at work that are really into photography, and they've taken me under their wing and helped so much. And I so appreciate it. Because I'm kind of like a sponge. If I can learn it, I want to learn it. I don't always know what I'm doing, but I try to figure it out as I go. So it's kind of how I'm approaching this, because, you know, working EMS as long as I have, I realized that this is a community that doesn't really want to talk to you. They really don't open up. And sometimes you don't even get their real names. So I have to go into it with an open mind and knowing that I may have to change the style that I was going to use. You know, they're not going to want me right in their face. And it's a trust building thing. So it's not going to be a quick project. It's going to take a while to earn that trust and to show them I'm there for the right reasons and that I want to bring awareness. Because if I am able to print a photo book or some sort of book, I want whatever the profit or whatever the proceeds are to go to an organization in our area to try to probably a small victory just to have soap and supplies handed out. So kind of thinking small, I mean, if it goes bigger than that, that'd be amazing. But I want them to know that it's there to benefit them. I do not plan to profit a dime off of it. I don't want to. I want it to go back to the people that need it.
Well, that's great. Well, you'll have plenty of resolution with the Q2 to crop in if you're not able to get quite close enough. But yeah, that 28 millimeter is, you know, you do get to get in pretty darn close to folks. But if you, you know, I've found a lot with mine that if you are shooting from maybe a 30 or a 50 distance, you know, obviously the resolution is so high that you can crop those in and you don't get as much, not that the Q2 lens has much distortion, but on the edges, like any 28 millimeter, it's going to have a little bit of, you know, the parallax or whatever you call it, you know, so people are a little bit just stretched out a little in the corners. But it's remarkably well controlled for a wider lens like that. So you have so much flexibility with that camera, even if you're not doing the in-body crop or the, you know, the different focal lengths. But I think it's pretty neat that on the when you adjust the focal length in the rangefinder there or in the viewfinder, that it still preserves the full 28 millimeter image in the raw file is great. Because, you know, sometimes I like to compose at 35 or 50. And then, you know, later you're just like, oh, there's like a little sliver of a branch in here and it's totally distracting from this photo. You know, you can move your crop or you still have everything there. So it's extremely valuable. I find myself wanting it on the SL2 sometimes saying, I wish this was wider and then I could play around with it after.
Yeah, that was one thing that attracted me to the Q2 was the crop factor. And when I found out the resolution and that, you know, at a 35, I'm still getting a really great shot.
But
I feel like for what I want to do with this project that I want to start, being able to go from 28 to 35 is a big deal for me because I don't want to make anybody feel uncomfortable. You know, and obviously I would have permission to take any photo that I take, but it would be very helpful to be able to switch photo lengths in that realm. And even I think the 50 millimeter is a usable photo.
Oh, totally.
75 is stretching it a little bit, I think, but to print. Yeah. But I think if I can be able to switch from 35 to 50 and not have to carry around multiple lenses, not have to, because I mean, the environments that I plan to go to, I go to, there's several homeless camps in Colombia. I got to know them from working EMS, but I now have friends that stay there. You know, I go out into that community quite frequently and just check on people because you just don't know. And there's not a whole lot of resources in Colombia. So I didn't want a big setup. So having a camera that's able to crop is a huge deal to me. Like, I know I've heard some people kind of rag on it, like, oh, you're going to crop in camera. Well, I am, because that makes perfect sense to me. that works for me.
They're probably coming from a place, people that haven't experienced that, you know, they're coming from a place where maybe they're used to a lower resolution or lower quality image. I mean, the You'll be blown away when you start importing the first selection of files from it, looking at those colossal resolution, you know, big files. I mean, and they're huge. Like the raw files, they're like, you know, 80 megabytes for one photo. So with your JPEG in there, you know, you burn up cards pretty quick if you don't have a pretty good size card, because the files are enormous. But there's so much there, you know. So the in-body crop thing makes total sense. And honestly, even if you just do DNG plus JPEG, and you play around with you know, with jumping down to 35 and 50 just for the purpose of composition, you know, you can, if you're going to print, or let's say whatever, you know, you're going to end up using these final things for sharing them on social media, like I said, you can, if you're using Lightroom, when you hit the crop tool in Lightroom, it's the neatest thing. You've probably seen this, you know, where it shows up and it shows you the full image, but it shows the pre-crop that was built into the raw file, you know, that was like, this is the crop that you had selected at the time you took the photo. So you can just make minor adjustments here and there. And it's just such a powerful tool because at 50, you're even at 75, like there's enough resolution to print in a small book for sure. I mean, you know, you probably wouldn't want to make it wall sized at that resolution, but I think it's, you know, it's 12 or 8 or whatever it is, but it's still even plenty. It's definitely plenty for social media if you really wanted to. It's just you don't get the benefit of that medium telephoto compression, but the 1.7 on the Q2, I'm sure you've seen plenty of files. I mean, it really does give you a beautiful shallow depth of field, even though it's a 28, it looks great.
Yeah, that's something I can't wait to play around with, is just having one tool that you can use in so many different ways. And I think hopefully I agree when I get the camera, but it seems like they've done a great job of making it almost the perfect street camera.
Yeah.
For my niche style photography, it works perfect for me.
I can't
wait for it.
I would say that the most recent firmware update really took it to the next level, because it didn't have the menu system that the SL2 has, with that really cool first screen. That's just the graphic identity of it is so, or, you know, the fonts, everything is so beautiful, and it's so easy to use on the touch screen. It didn't have that when I first got mine. It just went straight into like conventional menus, and it was fine. The menus aren't that deep, you know, compared to a Sony or something like that. They're relatively straightforward, just the things you need. But after the firmware update, they made it so easy to have that beautiful little screen to adjust your basics. But I mean, honestly, I kind of get it set up. I have a couple user profiles for different projects, so, you know, that I might, you know, have one style I'm kind of working on one project. So I'll have the camera set up for that environment, and then I'll save it as a user profile. And then I'll have a kind of a just shoot user profile. And then I have a high contrast black and white user profile, which doesn't really matter because the raw files are the raw files, but I still have it recording in JPEG. So I kind of, that's what I was going for at the time I took the photo. So like I end up just bouncing between those. And other than that, it's just the little wheel on the little thumb wheel is exposure compensation or ISO. And then you obviously have shutter speed and aperture, and what else do you need? It's like, it's so, once you get the hang of it, it's so easy to use that it's just, I don't even look at the camera anymore, which is kind of the goal for me, I think, is to just have it completely get out of the way and then produce what I'm looking for it to produce.
That was something about Fuji too that I'm excited about to experience on the Leica, is the menu system. It wasn't using Olympus. I think Olympus system's pretty intuitive, pretty difficult to navigate. But Fuji wasn't that difficult, but it did feel like I was going to menus to find menus hidden by menus.
Oh, so totally. Yeah.
It would slow me down. Now, there was customization you could do on it, so that was nice with all the little dials and stuff. But just every day flipping through, trying to do something quick. Because even when I'm not shooting people or doing street stuff, like if I'm in an abandoned building or something, I'm on a time crunch. I cannot be in there very long. Mm-hmm. So having to switch through and change things around, that was very frustrating in the beginning, but once I got the hang of it, I kind of knew where to click.
Yeah.
So it was kind of, it sped up.
Yeah. And it, the face detection works really good on it as well. If you're doing a lot of people photography and you want to be really fast and you're using autofocus presumably, then the face detection works good. When I first got the camera, it was not the greatest because you had to, kind of have one or the other. But, you know, where you couldn't have like small field and face detection or anything, like it was, you know, it was the AI. So the whole thing is, it's kind of like, it's determining what to focus on. If it doesn't have a face, you were, you know, had that kind of AI autofocus, or I don't know what they call it, but it sort of sucks. It's not that great. But after the firmware update, you can have, you know, the underlying, you have field autofocus on a small area, and then it will be overridden by a face, even if it's outside of that field. So it's a little bit nuanced, but it's so much more usable. It was a really major change for me, because it was to the point where it's like, I never, you know, wanted to use that detection, because it was just, you know, I didn't like, if there wasn't a face in it, I hated that it was that field autofocus. And yeah, so now that it's like, you can, you know, just have that small field in the middle, and you can vary the size of the field really easily too, depending on what you're doing. And then you can move it around with just touching the screen with your thumb. It's just super, super fast. But it's cool that you can have a small field in the middle for your autofocus, and then somebody walks into the very corner of the frame and it'll go zip and it'll lock onto them instead. So in a street photography situation, I haven't had another camera that worked like that. And so it's nuts how quick it really actually is.
Yeah, I heard the firmware update was a lot of users, or most users, are very happy with it. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to try macro mode too. I've never had a macro lens. I've never had any experience with it. So I want to try to see how that'll work in street photography and abandoned places, especially because I'm a history fanatic. So a lot of times when I choose a building to try to get access to or get permission to go into, it has a historic significance. And when you are going through there and you find this really cool object that you just want to focus on, I've had to get super close or lay on the floor, or, you know, all these things. And I'm really excited and pumped to get dirty laying in the floor to get cool objects, if that makes sense. I'm so excited to try macro. I think it'll be amazing.
Well, and it's a really neat party trick when somebody wants to look at your camera for the first time. You know, you turn that little macro ring, and it's pretty neat because it physically changes the distance scale and that, which is pretty kind of a neat little trick. Sometimes I just do it and I'm admiring it.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah. No, you'll dig it. I think you're going to be really happy with it. The you had mentioned that you were already on the hunt, or already had identified some accessories for it. What else were you going to add?
Well, I got the thumb grip thing from Leica, the one that goes into the hot shoe. And I had to bite the bullet and get a memory card. I got like 128 gigabyte memory card for it.
The thumb rest is essential.
And then it's what?
It's essential. I have that. And for sure. That's a good choice.
The one I had on my Fuji was great, because being in precarious situations, like there were times that I would be in like a abandoned mill or something, and to get to the next level, you'd have to climb up this ladder or something, or you'd see something mid climb. And it was such a nice feeling to have just that extra grip on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't feel like in that situation you can ever have enough safety measures for your camera. Like obviously yourself, but the camera to me, I want to make sure I have a grip.
Oh, for sure. So you got that and a big card.
Yes. I got a 128 gigabyte pro grade card. Mm-hmm. I did a lot of research on them. Apparently they have really good reviews out there, and it was a little bit more affordable than the Sony. And too, the Sony one I was looking at has been out of stock forever, and I don't know when they're getting that one back in. So I went ahead and just went with a really large card, just to, because I have no idea what these files are going to be like, or this is my first time owning a full frame camera. So I'm kind of in for like a learning experience with that. So I know I have to pick up more cards in the future, but I was hoping it would get me through for a minute anyways.
Yeah, you'll be fine with that. I mean, I have a 64 gigabyte card that I use in it, and it is one of those Sony tough cards I've got those for work, and that so it works great. And I've only, you know, filled it up once or twice when I just kind of really got trigger happy at an event or something like that. So it's not you'll have plenty of headroom with that, and you know, you'll be good. I think you'll be happy with that.
Yeah. I got a UV protector filter from Breakthrough Photography. That one had such good reviews, and then you had recommended it as well. So I went ahead with that. I think in the future I want to try a polarizer from them and just see. Never played around with polarizers, so I'm excited to kind of see how that works and if I like it or not. Screensaver. The basics, and an extra battery for sure.
Yeah, you gotta have the extra battery. Might as well build it in at the time that you buy the darn thing, because that, you know, what are they, like $200-ish?
There's $275.
$275.
Yeah, I remember looking at it, and my Fuji, my extra battery was like $35. Yeah. And I look at that, and I'm like, oh my gosh, what have I gotten myself into? Yeah. But I like added up all the accessories and the camera, and I looked at my schedule and was like, okay, my goal is to have it by October, and I'm just going to work as much and as hard as I can until then. And I made the goal, so I'm excited. It was like 650 hours of overtime in four months.
Oh my God. Wow.
And 2,200 hours total. So I lived, like, my fiance deserves credit too, because she was so supportive. And there were times that the only time we'd see each other in like 3 days was just meeting up for breakfast or making it work. I mean, I was exhausted, but it was worth every second.
Well, good for you. So. That's incredible, you know, to put in that much effort and to stay on task and so focused on it for so long. I have a tendency to chase shiny objects. It's hard for me to stay that focused. Yeah.
Me too. I definitely do the same, but I knew that it was the right tool for the things that I wanted to do and wanted to accomplish. And I'm lucky to work where I work because they're really good to us. So all the supervisors knew I had to like a goal.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be like, I'm assuming the first person they would call, because anytime, like, hey, you want to pick up this shift? You want to work a 36?
They knew you wanted those hours.
48. Yeah. Yeah, I'd work a 48-hour shift and then have a day off and then work another 48-hour shift. It was totally worth it. But I wouldn't have it any other way, because I think that it's going to make me appreciate and just get out there even harder, the fact that I had to earn it the way that I did.
I would agree. It's going to mean more to you than you know, I can't imagine really anybody else having it mean as much as it will to you. So the thing that I would say after that is that I'm going to be nervous for you, you know, taking it out into these dirty areas. So I would suggest insurance. I don't know if you've thought about insurance for it, just in case.
I have. And I was going to ask you, how do you go about doing that? Because that's definitely something I need to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can do it a couple different ways. I have done, I have a kind of a belt and suspenders approach. There's a commercial policy at work that we have for, you know, all of our equipment and gear. And so I have my stuff listed, scheduled on that, even though I own it, because I'm frequently using it for work. So, you know, mm-hmm. talking to our insurance agent there. So that's one thing, which, you know, because of my job, it gives me the ability to do that. The other thing that I do is that I join the PPA, the Professional Photographers Association, because they have, if you join, it's not cheap. It's I can't remember exactly the dues. It's a couple hundred dollars, but with that, you get up to $15,000 of insurance for your equipment. And you don't have to schedule that equipment, like, for instance, give them a list of exactly what's covered. It's just that you need to retain all your receipts and everything like that. And if it's damage, loss, stolen, whatever, you can, you know, activate that insurance and provide that. So that's one way to do it. Your mileage may vary. I would look online at reviews and stuff. For me, it was okay, because there were some other benefits to joining that group. But then even if you're not a professional, you can join that group. I've also done the Landscape Photographers Association, because they had a really good private insurance group buy system in there that you could upgrade to having your equipment insured through them. And they had like a, you know, a commercial photographer's policy that all the photographers that are in that association used. So there's some options out there, but yeah, especially because, you know, when I put my SL2 and lens and accessories and my Q2 and everything in one backpack, and carry it around with me everywhere. So there's a very nice used car worth of value in that bag. So I definitely yeah. don't want that bag to get stolen or, you know, leave it somewhere or anything like that. So it's pretty much tethered to my side. But, you know, if something ever happened, then, you know, I have it insured two different ways. You know, so
yeah. I had thought about going through like my insurance company, my State Farm, but I've not heard of any other photographers doing that. So I assume there's a reason why nobody else has. I don't know if it falls under like homeowners insurance, but I think I would be interested in joining something like you were talking about anyways, because mm-hmm. I think it would give me more resources to learn and to branch out, and definitely insurance has got to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it just gives you peace of mind, because, you know, the thing is that you want to be able to be pretty intrepid with your camera, but, you know, that's the one downfall is when you have that much effort and finance invested in there, you don't want them to be so precious that you're not willing to use them, and you're going to mm-hmm. use your iPhone instead because you don't want to damage your expensive camera. But I will say, I mean, mine is, I've had it for a year now, my Q2, and it is, it's been everywhere with me and thrown in backpacks and things. And I haven't used the lens cap since I got it. because the hood is so protective. You know, this like kind of really nice little hood that screws on. It's hard to get on and off the hood. Once you screw it on, it really needs to be tight to be straight. So it's like when you're putting it on, it's designed to thread exactly into that position at its very extreme. So I've got that. And then I've got a Breakthrough Photography filter on there. And it's, I don't know, I just throw it in the bag like that and everything's been fine.
Yeah, I actually found one. Because I'd heard people had problems with the lens cap just being kind of will fall off of mm-hmm. the Q2. And I don't want to. I found something called Q-Cap.
Yeah. Okay.
And
sure.
It's, it looked cool. So I went ahead and I'm just going to try it out and see if it works well. Everyone that's done reviews on it loved it. So hopefully I'll like it. I don't think it's necessary to have the cap on there necessarily. I think it's just an aesthetic thing that I enjoy.
Yeah.
On the camera.
And it depends on how you,
it's on there.
Yeah. And it depends on how you transport it and what you're doing with it. I mean, I have mine. I've got a couple different ways to carry it, but most of the time it's, like I said, it's in kind of just a little knapsack that I've got other stuff in there with too. Like my, you know, all my day-to-day stuff. It's kind of my everyday, it's my purse. You know, I have my two cameras and all my loose stuff in there and I just always have it with me. So I have I use a Tenba bring your own insert in there, and it's just big enough for the two cameras, extra battery, a charger and a couple straps. And it just fits really tight in there and I can slip it in the bottom of the bag.
Yeah, I need to look into one of those because I have a Frost River rucksack that I love.
Mm-hmm.
And that tends to be the bag that I've always used to carry when I'm going on some sort of photography adventures, what I call it, where I'm going to hike into a location or I'm going to go in a massive factory or something like that. But I also got a Billingham 72 to just kind of keep it in.
Oh, that's
all
cool.
The time.
Yeah.
Just kind of protect it for when it's in the big bag, at least has something on it to protect it a little bit.
Well, they make good stuff, Billingham stuff. I have a Hadley, Billingham Hadley Pro or something, and it's a beautiful bag. It's when I want to feel, you know, like you want people to take you really seriously as a photographer, I'll put everything in there because you just kind of look the business with it. It's a little bit too fancy. It's a little bit too fancy for my style day to day. You know, it doesn't look very good with it.
Yeah.
You know, like old crappy jeans and boots that I normally am wearing. So, but it's for special occasions, I guess. But no, that's great.
It's like a dress up. It's like a tie yeah. for photography. Yeah.
It was funny. The David Allen Harvey, one time I watched a video with him and he was talking about photographer's accessories, and you'd mentioned a tie, and he's talking about he kind of had this whole lead up to it, and the punchline was that the best accessory for any photographer was a necktie. He's like, you know, if you're like a dude photographer like me and you're trying to get access, he's like, this is the best accessory you could ever have. And he pulls out this like wrinkled crappy tie out of his bag. He's just like, I've gone into places before and, you know, people look at me like I'm crazy. He's like, I go into the bathroom, I put on this tie and I walk back out and people let you walk right through because they just, you know, you look like you're supposed to be there. So I thought that was pretty funny.
That is a really good point. I might have to steal that.
Yeah.
I would probably get looked at twice to be like, wearing a tie, yeah. But you know,
my equivalent to that is a safety vest. You know, if you have an orange safety vest on, you know, you can walk in anywhere. Or if you're carrying a ladder, that's another one. You can just bring a ladder with you wherever you go for no reason, because people assume if you have a ladder that you're, you know, you're there to fix something or do something, and nobody even looks at you when you walk by with a ladder.
A stethoscope. At these festivals, you can get on like Amazon and get like, not that I'm condoning this behavior, uh-huh. but like, you can get like a little EMT t-shirt from Amazon for like $5 and then just get a stethoscope and you go in any gate you want.
Anywhere you want. Oh God. Yeah. Perfect.
You just think you're EMS. So yeah. I figured that out working a lot of events. I was like, wow, they didn't look for anything.
Yeah. And just to anybody who might be listening to this, we assume no responsibility for the actions that you might take.
Yes.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yes. This is just a, an anecdote,
Don't sneak into concerts using a stethoscope and
right.
tell people that Taylor Schepperl said it was a good idea.
Yeah, you're going to be...
not a good idea.
No, it's not a good idea. But anyway, no, I think that'll be great. I'm excited for you. I would love to have you back on in a few months or something after you've had some experience with it and you've started to maybe get a little bit of traction with your personal project. That would be kind of interesting to see how it's going for you.
I would love that.
Yeah, trials and tribulations. I'm sure you're going to have a few. It's going to be it'll be a big adjustment. I mean, I went from an X100F to the Q2. So it was that was the exact transition that I went through when I got this camera, and it was a big change. I mean, it's totally different, but you know, as long as you just kind of focus on the fundamentals, the camera kind of figures out the rest for you. It's a great little camera, and it sounds perfect for the stuff that you're doing, and you're going at everything with like a just a big open heart and enthusiasm, and I'm just stoked that that this is happening for you.
I think the thing that kept me going with the Q2 as much is because like I'm big into social justice, I'm big into humanitarian style work. It's something that I love to do. I love people in general, but you know, as I was working the 650 hours of overtime, I got to communicate with some of my friends that are challenged with a home environment, and they're so excited about the project. They've been sending me, you know, they'll see me out or they'll see me on the ambulance stopping at a gas station. They'll come up to me like, hey, have you got the camera yet? Like, do you know when you're going to want to start interviewing people? And I talked to so-and-so and they would be interested in doing it. And so the people that I want to be the focus of the project are really excited about it. And I'm sure I'll have some that aren't, but word of mouth is starting to get around in Colombia, and there's more and more people getting on board. And it's so exciting to me to know that there's people willing, one, to trust me enough to talk to me, because that's huge, but two, that's brave enough to put it out there. Because that's a big deal to put your story out there and your face in a book. And that kept me going. Like every time I'd pick up a shift, like that thought kept me going. And it's just, I can't let them down. Can't do it. I'm excited for it.
Yeah. Well, we'll be keeping tabs on you, and way down the road when you're ultimately trying to put this into a book or something, we'll talk about it then too. And I'll be first in line to buy it for sure.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Oh no, this has been great. I'm really glad, because I've mentioned you in like, you know, half the episodes at one point or another. just because that first email that you sent me was incredible. And if people haven't listened to that, I hope they get a chance to go back. It was like the third or fourth episode and hear that. And I really appreciated the fact that you kind of, you know, laid it out too, your story, and sent it to me. And it really resonated with me, and it gave me a little bit of reason to keep, you know, doing this, because this is, you know, I mean, I don't have any real commercial objectives of doing this other than the fact that I don't have a lot of other people to talk to about my favorite topic. So this is great. I'm getting to meet new people and that, and, you know, try to hopefully find some sort of, real, mission or purpose for the podcast. So you're a big part of that.
Well, I really appreciate it. I appreciate the opportunity to tell my story, because that's actually the first time I've ever told the story. I mean, wow. There were people in the EMS community that knew where it gets around, but that was the first time that I, as a person, ever was like, I'm going to put it out here. And my hope was that somebody who doesn't, maybe they ran across the podcast and didn't know they liked photography, or maybe they have their iPhone and they love taking pictures but didn't know that they would love it even more with a camera, would hear that, and it would just give them some sort of outlet in a way. So I appreciate you having the platform for me to be able to do that. I think it's huge for people to find support in any topic, but especially art and behavioral health or depression and that kind of thing. Just knowing that there's other people out there that use that art form as, you know, a way to express their feelings is so important. So the podcast is very important. I mean, I look for it every week. Oh, good. You know, well, I'm always looking for it.
So I'm really happy for you, and I'm really pleased. And I will just say that, your bravery for sharing your story with me there resulted in lots of other people also sending me messages, which I think was really neat. And it really didn't occur to me how profound that was going to be to a lot of people. But some of the messages I've got from folks are just like real, you know, really emotional gut punches. I mean, people are, I don't know. It's out there. So yeah, you're a great example, Taylor. So I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I'm glad that I could help open the door for people. And I didn't, when I listened to the next episode you had on it, and there was like, you said so many people writing in, I was blown away. It made me so happy. I instantly called my fiance and was like, I didn't realize that would happen, but I'm so glad it did.
Yeah. Well,
it made me so happy.
And I think it's going to be an ongoing theme of this podcast too. I don't think it's going to be something that's going to go away. I think it's something we're going to revisit regularly and kind of keep it right at the forefront, because it's something that's important to me. You know, having listened to that episode, you know that it's, it's where it sits in my head. So yeah, no, it's great. Cool. Well, hey, I'm going to let you go. Awesome. And I really appreciate all this time. I'm going to definitely stay in touch with you. I'm looking forward to your Instagram updates, and shoot me an email. Let me know how it's going. Okay.
I will. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, hey, congrats on everything, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thank you.
Take care. This has been another episode of the Like a New Day podcast. Like a New Day is brought to you by me, Zachary Brannigan. You can find me online at zacharybrannigan.com. You can also find me on Instagram at ZGBRANIGAN. That's at ZGBrannigan. Music was provided by Epidemic Sound, and this is another episode of the Like a New Day podcast. Please feel free to reach out to me via email at ZGBrannigan@gmail.com or send me a private message on Instagram, but please give me a follow there. I love connecting with all of you out in the community. And thanks very much for listening, and I'm looking forward to the next one. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.